Welcome to the first episode in a new series of Directions on Microsoft podcasts. We're calling this Brainstorm. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor-in-chief here at Directions. I'm your host for this series, which is for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem and who want to hear our analysts discuss emerging topics on Microsoft products, services, and most importantly, Microsoft strategies. Brainstorm is your chance to see how the analysts at Directions on Microsoft do what we do. Twice weekly, the analysts here hold scope meetings where we talk about tech news of the week, reports on which we're working, the best ways to deliver the information that our customers need to know. Our goal is to bring you the best insights from the best independent Microsoft watching firm in the business, Directions on Microsoft. Brainstorm's meant to give you a front row seat to one of these scope meetings. And today's roundtable is going to feature analysts Barry Briggs, Rob Sanfilippo, and Andrew Snodgrass. Our topic today comes from an ongoing back and forth discussion between all the analysts about just what the impact of co-pilots will be on the enterprise. So unless you've been living under a rock, you know Microsoft has spent much of calendar 2023 announcing new Copilot AI assistants across its entire product line. And going into 2024, Microsoft's highly likely to continue this trend by announcing plans for even more Copilots. Making them available, though, is another matter. Microsoft even used its Ignite conference this year for IT pros and business decision makers to try to solidify its Copilot branding. Microsoft's trying to make the point that there's a Microsoft Copilot experience that works across all of its software and services. However, the reality of what Microsoft's Copilots are and how they work is a little more complex. Those who have a little history in Microsoft may remember when .NET was introduced and everything was called .NET. I'll be curious to hear what the analysts say. Are we back at that point with Copilots, or is this something different? So we're going to dive right in. I will ask the panel to introduce themselves when they first answer a question. Question one, just so everyone, including our listeners, are on the same page, let's back up for 1 second and start with a few quick definitions. What is ChatGPT? What are large language models? What are Microsoft Copilots? And are they Skynet and should we be worried? I want to start with Barry Briggs. And Barry, if you don't mind, please tell us who you are and then start answering our questions.
Sure. Thanks, Mary Jo. So I've had a long career in the software industry. Back in the late Jurassic, I was the lead developer for Lotus 1-2-3. How many people actually remember that?
Me.
For those who don't, it was a kind of a popular spreadsheet program back in the day, later a Lotus fellow. And then I was CTO for a number of startups. I spent about 13, 14 years at Microsoft, where one of my roles was as CTO for Microsoft's own IT organization. And in Directions, I cover Azure, AI, and anything else that happens to catch my eye. So LLMs, let's talk about that for a second. The key point here is they're just math. I want to spend a moment talking about that, and we are going to do some math, so don't be worried, though. We all remember high school algebra, y equals mx plus b. Remember slope of a line? It's not that important. But in that equation, y equals mx plus b, m and b are numbers. In AI talk, we call them parameters. Now, we can think of AI as just equations, right? I mean, in y equals mx plus b, we have two parameters, m and b. Now, if we build a neural network that can recognize handwritten numerals, if I write, say, scrawl 0 through 9 and hold it up to a camera, and I have a neural network that tries to decipher what that is, that takes over 13,000 parameters. That's just to recognize 0 through 9. So now you can kind of understand that to do natural language, you need hundreds of billions of parameters, or maybe even trillions. What are those numbers? What are the values of those numbers? That's what you have training for. And that's why you need tens of thousands of GPUs and months of compute time to create ChatGPT and the other LLMs. One other breakthrough I should mention is that modern AI has this concept called attention. So think about the sentence just for a second. I threw a ball against a car and it bounced. With statistics, an AI can assert with high probability that the word "it" I threw a ball against the car and it bounced. It refers to the ball. and not the car. The car didn't bounce. Now, funny thing is, we know that instinctively, right? We have common sense. AIs don't. They figure it out statistically, you know, probability-wise and so forth. So AIs are not self-aware. They're not Skynet. Now, this can be both good and bad. And hopefully, in our conversation, we'll have a chance to talk about both. Back to you.
All right. That's a great introduction. With that background, I want to move on a bit and start to focus more on Microsoft specifically. So, Rob Sanfilippo, I'd like you to tell folks who you are and why you are so bullish about co-pilots, which he is, people. Every week in our regular meetings, he talks about co-pilots. So, I'm also curious, why does everything at Microsoft seem to need a co-pilot? And what do you think Microsoft's strategy is here?
Okay, thanks, Mary Jo. Yeah, so I'm Rob Sanfilippo, and I've been at Directions for 15 years. And before that, I worked at Microsoft for about 14 years. I worked on Exchange Server before it was even called Exchange back in the 90s. But here at Directions, I cover developer tools and things like Visual Studio and .NET and AI and Azure. So I get into all this technical stuff, and Copilot is the most fascinating thing going on, and it definitely is very technical underneath. But what is it? So there's two big things I just wanted to mention up front here about Copilot is that I think make it important. The first one is Copilot taps into application and service functionality that I call it has been dormant for many years, potentially even decades. But it can tap into that functionality by leveraging natural language. So for example, Copilot for Microsoft 365 could make Office application tasks significantly easier by reducing the need for users to be trained in the mechanics and UIs of complex product features. So these dormant features that have long been present in those applications, and then new features that arrive hereafter, could be more accessible to users because they can be driven by natural language interaction, and everyone can do that. So let's be more concrete. What are some examples? Excel, pivot tables, cell threshold highlighting, spark lines. You look at PowerPoint, you have all this great slide build transition features. You look at Word features like bookmarks, which have been around for decades, really, and a lot of people never heard of them, but they could be very useful. Here's an example. You could go into Excel as just any normal user that isn't really trained thoroughly in Excel, and you could type, count up the number of yes and no votes in column A, and make a pictograph with smiley faces for yes and frowns for no. And it would go ahead and produce that for you based on just the yes and no's that you typed in some rows and in some cells. Now, you could do that without Copilot today. You've been able to do that for years, but you need to be an Excel power user, and you need to spend a lot more time than typing that request in natural language. So that's the first thing, is just getting access to functionality that's there and that's coming soon.
I gotta just interrupt you for 1 minute, because of all the co-pilots in Microsoft 365, I am the most excited about Excel, because I know very, very little about using Excel. And since I joined Directions, I realized you guys do everything in Excel. I'm really looking forward to having somebody help me, namely a co-pilot, to understand when you tell me, add this to this row, do this, do that. I just think that's a great use case and something that would make me more productive.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, Excel, I have a long history of it. It's probably my favorite application of all time. And I started using it in high school, and I wrote Excel macros, was one of the first programming languages that I used, and did all kinds of cool automation stuff. So I really got deep into it and learned all the things you could do a long time ago. But I know that, and since then it's evolved so much too.
Right.
And I know there's just a lot of people out there that have no idea. They can go into Excel and type numbers and add up rows and things, but maybe even make graphs, but there's so much more, so much power there that you can use. And Copilot might bring that up to the forefront, so everyone gets access. Mm-hmm. That was one thing. I said I had two things. The second thing about Copilots is plugins. So there's this common architecture that all co-pilots at Microsoft use, which is a great thing because that allows the company to just stamp out co-pilots using an architecture. They don't have to start from scratch each time a new product group wants to build a co-pilot. So plugins can extend any co-pilot using that same model. So it gives every co-pilot additional knowledge and generative capabilities for whatever that space needs, for whatever that domain needs. So for example, a plugin could look up data in some internal product sales database, or could access information in an employee handbook, could create a tracking item in Atlassian Jira, which is a popular application for tracking tickets. It could even command things. It could drive manufacturing equipment. That gets a little scary, like you mentioned Skynet. Maybe that's the beginning of Skynet, but I don't think so. I think there's a lot of productivity that'll come out of that. That's positive. But there's so the plugins, that's the model, and that's going to, you know, Microsoft's going to give the platform and all the base functionality, but then anyone can start building on top of that and really extend the capabilities of all co-pilots. And there's a tool called Copilot Studio was just announced. It's going to make it even easier to build plugins for power users, so-called citizen developers, to be able to go and build them even if they don't have extensive programming experience.
Mm-hmm. Copilot Studio, the product formerly known as Power Virtual Agents, I believe, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's some branding morphing going on.
Yes. All right. Now we're going to get into some of the a little more controversial, maybe not more controversial than Skynet, but some controversies that have surrounded Microsoft's strategy in the Copilot space lately. And I'm going to call on Andrew Snodgrass about what happened with Microsoft and OpenAI around Thanksgiving. And what do you think this means, if anything, for Microsoft's Copilot strategy? And also don't forget to introduce yourself, Andy.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a little concerned that I'm the soap opera guy. I'm not sure why I got stuck with that. All right. But yeah, I'm Andrew Snodgrass, a longtime database software developer, ran through a career that had me as a CIO for a large engineering organization. Probably the biggest claim to fame I have here at Directions is I'm one of the analysts who has never worked for Microsoft. And so mine's always been on the commercial side, away from the hub that is Microsoft. All right, so OpenAI and the Sam Altman saga.
Yes.
You know, we can debate this one, right? And we can let the other guys chime in on it. I believe most of that has settled down now, you know, which it happened over a few days and then it was done. But the issue was the OpenAI board fired Sam Altman, right? And with very little notice, and it caused a series of other people to leave. And, you know, there was all this uproar and it the Twitter sphere or X sphere was going nuts at the time. And Satya turned around and at one point offered Sam and his crew a job at Microsoft, said, we'll set up an AI group there. And they were going to do that. And then Sam got reinstated with all his crew and most of the OpenAI board wind up getting fired. Right. And so it's one of these typical things you see happen all the time. Obviously, there's more nuances in there. And if anybody wants to talk about them, go ahead. But the final outcome on it was, I think, very beneficial to Microsoft. Okay, so Microsoft's preferred leader, Sam, still in charge and even more in charge. The investment they have in OpenAI is still protected. The board members who were, shall we say, cold against Microsoft are gone. And Microsoft has a seat on the board. It's a non-voting seat, I know, but they still get to find out all the conversations that are going on. So politically, it's a beneficial thing. So all in all, I think it went well for Microsoft. But at the time, there was a lot of discussion about it and a lot of, you know, uproar. And I think it had more to do with just the social soap opera aspects of it. I don't think it was anything that Microsoft was ever in real danger about. You know, they have good agreements with OpenAI, and these are legal agreements that allow them to use ChatGPT and LLM and have access to all the back end stuff. And they even have some exclusive rights to certain features, right, that OpenAI was providing. And with a $10 billion commitment that they had, you'd expect them to have good agreements, and they do. So even if Sam had stayed at Microsoft, I'm not sure it would have slowed down. In fact, you could argue that having him in Microsoft may have even escalated what they were doing and made it even more commercial. You know, and I kind of go back and forth on this of whether or not they should have gone that direction, because you've got, you know, and Barry, chime in on this, and Rob, the Google and Amazon are coming out with all their AI competing services, and a lot of those are actually controlled inside their organization. So Microsoft actually has this little bit of separation with OpenAI, and the others I don't think have as much. But as far as this whole soap opera, I'm glad it's over with, because it was a distraction.
Well, you know, if I could chime in.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this is that Microsoft finds itself in a very unusual situation, which is, you know, they actually are enjoying first mover advantage over Amazon.
How rare is that?
Yeah, pretty darn rare. And the OpenAI scenario, you know, when I look at it, I say, you know, Microsoft, even Satya, you know, there's an old saying, if you can't be smart, be lucky. And I don't know which one Satya was, but maybe a little bit of both. But it could not have worked out better for Microsoft in that, you know, OpenAI is in place. Everybody's happy. You know, if anything, the personal loyalty from Sam to Microsoft and Satya has got to be bolstered, because Satya offered them a home almost immediately. So that's all goodness. The other thing I'd say, though, you know, you mentioned AWS and Google and others like Anthropic and so forth. You know, what's interesting about this is that if you look at the base LLMs, right, the ChatGPT style application, that's rapidly becoming, I don't want to say commoditized, but they're common, right? You know, Meta's Llama 2 engine is open source and so on. Where Microsoft has this, and you know, I'd say competitive advantage is just what Rob was talking about a moment ago, which is they can take the LLMs and attach them to their existing assets, you know, Office and Dynamics and so forth, you know, and, you know, make those even more compelling applications. So, you know, I think just the pure chat application has limited competitive differentiation. The fact that you can use them with your with your data and with your information in your applications like SharePoint and so on, provides Microsoft with a real advantage.
I'm surprised how fast we've gone to commoditization as well on it. And it seems like if you really wanted to look at it from an investment side, because whenever everything goes to commodity based, right, then everybody has it and the differentiation is gone. And I think we're going to get to that very quickly on it. I think the real thing is going to be the computing on the back end. We should have all just bought more NVIDIA stock 18 months ago, and then we could all just retire and not have to worry about anything.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one other angle to this. Let's talk about the history of how this began, the recent history, going back all the way back to 2021. GitHub Copilot was Microsoft's first Copilot, and it was very successful. And so GitHub, you know, Microsoft acquired that service in 2018. That's for developers, application lifecycle management. It started as the place that most people in the world stored their open source code. But it's now a Microsoft property, and that's where the first Copilot was. It was GitHub Copilot. And it's a pretty, well, straightforward, maybe not the right word, but when you think about, well, what kind of assistant can you build that works with natural language, one that turns natural language into computer code, that seems like a reasonable first step. And so the premise was proven with that product, and it became generally available quickly and adopted by developers. So it helps developers. They can just type in essentially the code that they want written, but use natural language instead of C# or JavaScript or whatever language that they would have to use to be very precise to program. And it works great. It's amazing to see. When I first saw the demos of that a few years ago, it was unbelievable. It's like you can just describe it and the code comes up, because it was trained on billions of lines of code from across the internet from open source projects. And it just knew APIs and it knew syntax, and it could classical functions that you wanted to write could just come up in seconds and when you mention them, and then you can put them right into your code. So it's an amazing product. It's evolving. Even just last month, many new features were announced for GitHub Copilot. But that's where this began. And so then it turned into, okay, well, that, you know, that was made possible by OpenAI and their first model called Codex, and now we're onto the GPTs. But that really established a good foothold for Microsoft to start building these co-pilots, and now we know what happened in the last year or so. That's a little bit of history I just wanted to bring into this.
Yeah, you know, first mover, right? And I think Barry's comment on that was really good. And we've all just found out that Mary Jo's comment about Rob Sanfilippo really loving Copilot is obviously true. And it's a long-term love affair that's been going on.
Yes, for multiple years.
I think the only negative that I saw from the OpenAI Microsoft debacle was all this attention that got trained on the two companies during the firing, rehiring has now kind of piqued the interest of some regulators, right? So we've got European Markets Commission and we've got the FTC now saying, wait a minute, what is the exact relationship with Microsoft and OpenAI? Like, does Microsoft own them, even though they don't like to use the word own? I mean, they've invested what, like $13 billion is the estimate I've seen so far.
Yeah.
So I think that was the one negative maybe that Microsoft probably isn't happy about. It got people thinking about what is this relationship and should it be regulated?
Yeah, I'm not so sure that it was necessarily because of that, although that probably did escalate it, because I know there's been a lot of discussion about how do you regulate AI, and the European Union's come out with some things just recently in the last couple of weeks where they want more controls over intellectual property rights, over personal data rights, and everything else around this AI realm of things. The U.S. is trying to do some there as well. It's a little hard in a country where you rely on industry regulations as opposed to a government regulated an industry. And so it's kind of a different approach. I'm not sure how quickly it'll go. But get back to the whole question on it. As far as the soap opera of the Sam Altman side, my big thing off of this, what I was so excited about, is this is a very fast, very concise, well-documented case study for future business students. And I think it's going to be taught in courses across the country in coming years.
I bet you're right.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to take a quick break now to talk a bit more about what we do here at Directions on Microsoft. First and foremost, despite our name, we are not affiliated with Microsoft. We provide product strategy and licensing information about Microsoft Enterprise products. Among the many services we offer are our regular Microsoft licensing boot camps to help customers new to licensing get up to speed and veterans to refresh their knowledge about Microsoft licensing. We also offer advisory services such as EA negotiation support and Microsoft strategy assessments, where we help you one-on-one with your specific Microsoft product questions and licensing issues. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com or email info@directionsonmicrosoft.com to learn more about all the different services that we offer. All right, back to our esteemed panel. We have more questions. Now that we understand a little bit about what copilots are, everything from Microsoft seems to have a copilot. So I know, Andrew, you just finished building a massive, and I'm not kidding, it is massive, chart comparing all the copilots offered by Microsoft, whether they're in or for a product or service. So now the question is, are all copilots created equal?
Well, you know, it's funny, is we have a massive copilot chart. I sat down and started building the thing, mostly because I have a hard time understanding why people do things at times. And so it helps me to write them down, right?
Right.
And it came about from some of our scope meetings, right, where we were talking about copilot, and every analyst in there was mentioning a copilot. You know, they're in their different areas, like there was stuff in Windows and Office and Rob Sanfilippo and GitHubs, and I had Dynamics and Power BI and databases, and they were just copilot here, copilot there, copilot everywhere. And there was no consistency to the naming. There was no consistency to the description of these things. And we said, you know, it seems like every blog post that Microsoft came out with, they said Microsoft Copilot. And then you actually had to read down a couple of paragraphs to find out which one they were talking about. Mm. And so we built this chart. And collectively, we're updating it every month or so. And it's on our website if anybody wants to take a look at it. And as of December 2023, where we are right now, there are just over 30 distinct co-pilots. And yes, I said 30 as in 30. Okay. I don't think that's surprising, really. If you get in and look at it, generative AI and LLMs can be used in a lot of areas and can bring a lot of benefits. I'm kind of surprised how fast Microsoft came out with so many of them. I think they did a really nice design on the framework that they could share these things and build them for lots of different areas. But all the co-pilots, because of where they work within the Microsoft software and ecosystem, they all have to be different, right? Like Copilot for GitHub, or sorry, GitHub Copilot. It's the one that gets to keep its name. It's not a four. It's just GitHub Copilot. This is trained on the internal and external data. It can be trained on internal if you pay for it, right? And it will interpret your request and build code. Then there's a thing called Copilot Dynamic Sales, and it's trained on company sales data, and it evaluates leads and potential contracts. And then there's a Copilot for Power BI, trained on Microsoft data and the Power BI service, different commands and APIs. And it is used to interpret report data and help users build report from that data, right? All within Power BI. And then you got the Microsoft 365 collection of things, right? There's a Copilot for Teams, for example, and this is trained on lots of internal data, but then it uses the Teams service and the ability to analyze user data like meetings and create summaries, right? And so if you think about it, each one of these Copilots has to be trained differently in order to be effective. They have to be trained in different types of data, different systems and APIs. They have to be trained specifically for the function that they're going to perform. Okay. And that also means that each one of these co-pilots, as we found out as we started building this magic chart, is licensed differently with different prerequisites, and they're priced differently as well. And the thing to take away from this is there is no single Microsoft co-pilot. Okay, that's a brand that sits on top of a lot of other things. There is no one co-pilot to rule them all. There's not anything out there like that. There's just a bunch of these co-pilots.
Right. So there's no co-pilot that's my rant. For co-pilots, right? Like, that's what we keep talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Barry? Are all co-pilots created equal? Is this?
Well, actually, that's a good question. And I think the answer is almost certainly no. And it's actually one of the concerns I have about Microsoft right now is that, I think the company is so obsessed with co-pilots that, and you understand why that is, of course. I mean, developers, they're just, like anybody else, they're going to go after the bright, shiny object. And the bright, shiny object of today is co-pilots. Whoever implements the co-pilot first gets the biggest bonus, most stock options and so forth. And yet there's other features that need to get built in their products, whatever those are. And so, I worry a little bit that Microsoft is doing co-pilots to the exclusion of, some of the key features that enterprises really require. So, both it's, are they created equal and are they doing these when they should be doing other things?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point, Barry. And it brings up another one as well. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Anytime. Yeah. You have to also remember that co-pilots, in the use of the term co-pilot, doesn't always apply to an LLM or some kind of chat interface where the user is interacting with the software or the data. Okay, they're actually using, and they're doing this especially in Dynamics, is they're using the co-pilot brand to recategorize things that have already existed that we would normally put into machine learning, like predictive maintenance and maybe analysis of conversations, things that were already in the system. Mm-hmm. They're using those and calling them co-pilots when, in fact, they're just something else. But they like this co-pilot brand so much. And I think that gets back to your earlier comment of if we go back a ways in the Wayback Machine and talk about .NET, they threw .NET just peanut buttered everywhere. And it was on top of everything and it didn't make any sense. And I'm kind of like Barry, I'm a little afraid that they're using this a little too much and it's distracting them. But we'll see, it may change in a year.
Right.
Yeah, Rob? I could say something. here's how I sum it up. In 2023, we watched AI take over not only the tech industry's mindset, but mainstream society's mindset. Mm. So ChatGPT became a household word, even though many people have no idea what it stands for or how it works. So You know, AI is an entrenched theme. It's a major Microsoft initiative. It needs to be addressed, if not emphasized, by all product groups of the company. And Copilot, it's the brand, it's the user experience, it's the architecture Microsoft uses to deliver AI. So we're at a point where a Microsoft product or service without a Copilot is seen as behind the curve. Therefore, Copilot's everywhere.
Right. Yep. Believe it or not, I at my Thanksgiving this year, there was actually a family argument over AI. I did not start this, but one of my relatives said to someone else, I use AI every day in my job. And the other person's like, you do not. That's a lie. Come on. And I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? And he's like, I use Bing Chat. That's Copilot, right? I'm like, Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because my neighbor owns a barbershop and he wanted to open up a second one. And he came over the other day and he said, hey, Andy, can you take a look at this? It's a business proposal. So I took a look down through and I thought, wow, this is really well written. And I said, Simon, did you come up with this? He goes, nah, I use ChatGPT.
Nice. All right. So we're talking about how everyone everywhere wants to be on the Copilot bandwagon, but it's not all roses, right? Like there are things organizations need to watch out for when they're thinking about deploying Copilots. Who wants to start with this one? Because there are a lot of different things people have to be aware of before they jump in, right?
I'll start. Okay. A couple things. One is that, you know, I mentioned before, it's just math, right? And there's no kind of underpinnings of common sense underneath it. And what that means is that, you know, and we've seen examples of this, is that AI in general, it can get things wrong. I mean, it just can just get things just dead wrong. And I've seen plenty of examples of that, in my own uses of it. And the other thing, too, is we've seen this, actually, you can do a search on ChatGPT and plagiarism, and you'll see that there are, you know, some number of lawsuits about that, whether they're valid or not, I couldn't say. You know, but the point is that, you know, I think it's a, my own view is that it's ChatGPT is something you can use to amplify your own work, but you have to check it, right? You have to make sure I treat like GitHub Copilot, treat it like a junior programmer. You have to review the code, a junior marketer. You have to review the text. And, you know, OpenAI and Microsoft both say they'll indemnify customers for, you know, plagiarism lawsuits or what have you. We really don't know what that means exactly yet. You know, it hasn't been tested in court. So, you know, the best advice I can give is, you know, when you use it, check its work.
I have one.
Yes.
I have this thing about the data that it's trained on, especially if it's internal data. And I went through a lot of analysis on Dynamics. And one of the things it does is it provides recommendations for like call center people to answer questions. Okay. And it will analyze the caller's conversation, find out what it is they're actually having a problem with, and automatically go off and search the database of past solutions and everything and come up with a recommendation. And it's a nice idea, right? The problem I have is it can only give recommendations that are as good as what's been done. Okay. And there's a tendency to adopt a complacent attitude on it. You will never be able to do better than we've already completed or already done, because that's the only thing that the AI has ever learned. And I'm afraid that in some situations, in some sales situations, customer service, maybe even some data analytics side, is that people will become so reliant on it to give them the answer that they'll stop trying to think of a new solution. And that's the point where things become homogenized, where there's no differentiation, we're no better than anybody else because we're all relying on the same data.
Right.
Yeah.
And speaking of data, we've talked about this among ourselves on our meetings. Not only is it only as good as your own data, but your own data needs to be pretty well organized, right? It needs to be organized in a way that things you don't want shared as across the company are protected with the right set of protections. Data needs to be stored in a consistent way, but who does that, right? Like, so there's a lot of work you have to do even before you implement Copilots, it seems. You can't just jump in, right?
Somebody said, don't give Copilot to your SharePoint admin.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. But, you know, that's really true, because think about it. One of them that I like in Microsoft 365, right, the co-pilots that are there, is it will find information for me if I do a search, and it'll find everything that I actually have rights to. Yeah. But that may not be what I should have rights to. You know, most of us work in certain SharePoint sites and certain environments and certain folders and everything else that we know are there, and that's what we do on a daily basis. Well, suppose somebody in a remote office has set up a folder with HR-related data and had forgotten to put proper controls on it because it's a small office, and made it available to everybody. My search is going to find that, and I'm going to start seeing stuff that I shouldn't see. So, Mary Jo, you're right. This idea of you need to set up your protection and all your security controls across all the data, I think most companies are not fully prepared to do that, and that they're going to expose stuff that they really don't want people to see.
All right. I'm going to take another break. Rob, do you want to chime in before I do?
I do. I had one more point on this, what to watch out for. It's training. And one of my uncomfortable feelings about co-pilots or AI is that people are not going to know what to do with it. And it's got so much power. And I'm just thinking of an analogy. I wasn't around back at this time, but when movie making technology first came out, what did people do? They would get in front of the movie camera and they would stand still because they were used to having their photograph taken, and they didn't know what to do in front of a camera that would film video, you know, action. And so they just stood there. So that's kind of like, well, when you give someone a co-pilot, you give someone a prompt and say, hey, just type in what you want it to do. There's a kind of a fear in that they won't know what to do, or they won't kind of think it can't really do that, so I'm not even going to try. So the co-pilots will have this unimaginable power to tap into. It's going to be important to get users oriented to use them efficiently. And there's going to be tools. Microsoft announced Copilot Lab. It's going to help users learn what co-pilots can do and how to construct the best prompt. But users should also be encouraged to experiment. There's going to be new ways to use co-pilots that even Microsoft hasn't dreamed up. But of course, like we've already said here, administrators and leaders, they're going to need to remain vigilant that the products produced through co-pilots within their companies comply with those internal and external regulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep, I'm wondering what boards are going to do on that. I think there's going to be a lot of audits that come along where people are saying, you know, this is a new vector for exposing us to risk or liability or litigation, and how do we put some controls around it?
We've already heard that from customers, actually, which is, you know, some customers, and there's a wide spectrum of responses to AI and co-pilots in the enterprise. Some are turning it off altogether and absolutely forbidding people from using any sort of AI. Others are, you know, doing trials with small groups of people. Others are basically saying, you know, the floodgates are open. So, you know, I think it'll be a while before we kind of get any kind of sense of what the kind of right, prudent approach to governance is.
Yeah, I think the legal industry is pretty excited about AI, not just because they're going to be using it, but because they're going to have all kinds of new work around it.
Boy, is that true.
Rob, your comment about building the right prompt, asking the right question. You know, I know it's a joke, and we've all seen these memes out there, but the idea of programmers are not at risk with AI because it involves the project manager or program manager asking the right question and actually giving the right requirements to AI to build software. And since they never do that anyway, programmers will always have a job. But it's very true. If you don't ask the right question, you're only going to get as good a response as you ask for. And that's going to be new for a lot of people.
All right. I think that's an excellent spot to take another quick break. Now, after this break, we're going to go to customer question and our hot button segments, two new pieces of our Brainstorm podcast. But first, I want to talk a little bit more about our licensing boot camps. Directions boot camps are the fastest way to ensure your company gets the most for your Microsoft dollar and stays compliant. The next virtual class is March 11th to 15th, but we've also got an in-person boot camp in San Diego from January 24th to 26th next year. I had a chance to attend the Atlanta boot camp this year, and I can tell you that this training definitely does live up to the hype. It offers the most up-to-date, comprehensive way for those new to licensing and for old hats to get familiar with new rules. If you're interested in the boot camps, go to directionsonmicrosoft.com/get-training or contact sales at directionsonmicrosoft.com. Okay, now we're going to field the customer question that we recently received, and we're going to keep customer names and locations out of this, but we're going to just talk among ourselves about what the customer asked us. So we had an enterprise customer contact directions with a relatively short, but likely very complex question. The question was, should they be developing their own co-pilots for their in-house or line of business processes at this point? Rob, I'm going to let you start. I already know you're going to say yes, but go ahead.
How did you know? I say yes. Well, at a high level, you know, organizations that haven't realized yet should be aware that you have to do AI now. Your competitors are doing it. Whether it turns out to be a boon for productivity or unfulfilled hype, it's too risky to avoid evaluating and preparing to adopt it to remain competitive, if not take the lead. So we're going to find out how this all plays out in the coming years. Maybe it really is the new paradigm, or maybe we'll learn lessons of what not to do. But like the web, mobile computing, social media, the cloud, it's not something that should be sidestepped. But as far as building your own tools internally, so yeah, there's a lot of, you can just start adopting co-pilots, take what Microsoft gives you and run with that. But as I mentioned near the beginning, the idea of these plugins where you can extend it to new domains, maybe it's not even done internally, but you use third-party plugins for your area of whatever industry you're in. And there's going to be plenty of those. There's going to be all kinds of ecosystems around those.
So are you thinking you like with Salesforce, do they have a plugin into Office so that if somebody's looking for stuff, they can find it in Salesforce data as well?
Yeah.
Is that kind of example you're looking at?
That's a perfect example. And we've already seen this for like with connectors for things like Logic Apps and for the Power Platform, where there's already those ways to extend that platform into all these third parties. So you'll see that same kind of thing, but they'll be Copilot plugins now, and not only for enterprises, but it's going to be in the consumer space too. So even when you're using that Bing Chat Copilot, whatever it may be called today, you're going to see extensions into things like Instacart and Spotify and consumer level things so that that Copilot can tap into all those services. And third parties and all these companies, they're going to want that. They're going to say, look, I want to be part of that Copilot ecosystem. I want Copilot to work with my particular functionality in my space. It's going to help my business. So you see it there. But yeah, as far as organizations, if they have the budget and the resources, definitely it's not too early to start thinking about how to extend Copilots to just give it even more power and just make it more worthwhile to adopt across their companies and organizations.
Hey, Rob, let me ask a question on this. So if I'm an enterprise and I'm either going to, the two approaches I can take on, I can extend an existing one using plugins or modify and all that. I can write co-pilots myself on the framework, that type of thing. My concern as a enterprise head is my guys are going to start, my people are going to start developing all these things, all these customizations, everything. But it's based on a framework and a backend that feels to me very much like a version one. What's the likelihood that Microsoft's going to be changing that framework, extending that framework, modifying it, and that'll cause me to modify what I've written on top of it? I mean, are we getting into this? I'm relying on APIs and writing code and having change management and lifecycle management, just like everything else. I mean, this isn't an easy just jump in and do it. You've got to think about this like you would any other application, right?
You do. And, you know, Microsoft's a platform company, so this isn't a new problem to solve, right? Building a platform that's going to evolve and how do you support your long-term customers and their legacy applications? So Microsoft's an expert at that. They always are going to figure out how do you migrate? How do we support backward compatibility going forward?
Okay.
But, you know, interesting thing that's different about co-pilots and building plugins than it has been in the past to build on top of these platforms is that A large part of defining a Copilot plugin is done through natural language. So rather than writing code and writing a bunch of imperative code around a bunch of APIs, you actually, as a developer, describe what your APIs can do using natural language. And Copilots read, so computers are talking to each other using natural language. So the Copilots will read the natural language that you've defined or added into your definition files around your plugins, and they will interpret what that means using the same technology they use to interpret what a human types in. And so that's how a Copilot will talk to its plugins, is through natural language. So that makes it easier to maintain going forward, because it's not about a bunch of APIs that are going to have new parameters and new features. It's just always going to be natural language. And so I think there's going to be more longevity in the work that you put into building a plugin than might have been true about building like an application on Windows in the past.
Okay. And so you do think this is Skynet and it's going to take over, and GPT is going to be the overlords, right?
I'm a big fan of the Terminator movies and the universe. I don't want that to actually happen. I think we're far off from that happening, but you never know. Yeah.
Well, actually, that does lead to one of the things I thought was interesting on it. Right, we started with ChatGPT 3.5, and then 4's come out, and I know they're working on a new version on it. Now, we would expect that each one of these things is successively more successful or better at what it was doing than before. If we're doing a reliance on creating these things and all these plugins and everything else, and then we come out with ChatGPT 5, what kind of level of testing do we need to go back through? I'm really bullish on this, but I'm also a little bit afraid, to be honest, because it seems like this is rife to say we're entering into a new world where we've got less control than we had before.
Well, I think that's true, Andy. But what I'd say is it's less about how many parameters there are in the LLM than it is about how you actually use it. You know, one of the examples I use is, if you say you're in a combat, for example, and you say to you give instructions to a drone. It says, go, find and destroy all the green trucks, on the assumption that they're tanks, right? But you don't do a good job of training what you really want it to go blow up, then you're blowing up not just tanks, but maybe other kinds of trucks, or maybe cars, or maybe houses that are painted green and stuff like that. So, a lot of this, I think, and that's where I think that's not Skynet, that's just dumb training. And yeah, that's where I think the real danger is that we put too much reliance on just how smart these things really, really are.
Yeah. One of the fascinating things about testing, and I guess it's been like a decade now that we've been joking about how there's really no testing anymore. End users test products, and then you get patches so fast that that's how software development happens. But one of the interesting things, we talked about GitHub Copilot, it can write code for you. Well, it can also write test cases, and test cases are just code anyway. And most testing is automated. It's not really ad hoc manual testing. So testing is getting better because the AI is doing the testing, and is essentially because it's writing the test cases and running those through automation. So, there's a good future prospect for where testing is going from here, because it will just be automatic through AI, or at least more so than it has been.
Now, see, I think this is probably a good idea, but the idea of something writing the code and then writing the test cases for the code that it's just written, it sounds a little wrong to me.
Yeah, we're back to Skynet again.
Okay, all right, fine.
All right, I'm going to close us out and have everybody talk about their hot buttons. We do this in our regular scope meetings too. At the end of the meeting, we say, what are people working on right now? Or is there something you're like really into, something that caught your eye or thought was very interesting? Any of you have something you want to share?
Yeah, I could start. As much as I love the AI and I love the Copilot, there are a lot of announcements that happened, especially in November. And they weren't all just about Copilots and AI. On the developer front, there's .NET 8. It's now generally available. It's got new ways to use Blazor to build websites. And then GitHub, there was a GitHub Universe conference. It was mainly focused on AI and GitHub Copilot, but there's new tools there for developer productivity that help reduce code security vulnerabilities. And then, of course, Azure, that was the star of the show up until at least a year ago, and it's still pretty relevant. These services continue to evolve, so that we see a lot going on in Azure that's not even AI. So the AI stuff is great, but it's not the only show in town. So, you know, keep your day job for now.
But, yeah. All right. Well, you know, it's funny because Copilot took such a front seat for all the announcements, right? And in my world, one of the areas that I thought was under advertised, which is a big deal, is this Microsoft Fabric. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I hate the name, you know, Fabric to all of us techies is a back-end related thing, and, you know, Service Fabric and all of that. And this isn't that. Microsoft Fabric went generally available in November. It's an integrated data analytics and data sharing solution. It's mostly built on a lot of existing services, Synapse Analytics, Azure Data Factory, Azure Data Lake Storage, Azure Data Explorer, Power BI, all the rest. All right. I'm not going to go into the extensive list, but it's all about anyone who uses any of these services and has to link them together on their own right now. Microsoft Fabric is about simplifying that deployment, simplifying the collaboration, the security, and the purchasing. And so you can do this much easier, for the most part, than you could before. And I'm very bullish on Fabric. I like the direction they did on this because it makes admins' jobs easier and it improves security. The two big concerns I have on it is that it's generally available because it's not done. It's still baking. Now, some of the components I'd put in the 90 to 95% level of done. Others are more like around 60. And I just want customers to be careful when they move this stuff into production because they could do it too soon and not be supported and stuff will change on them. The other is, and this is just a standard comment of true of every Microsoft service I've ever covered, migration is not as easy as advertised. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is a much bigger effort than you might think it is. And I'm worried some customers are going to just try to copy and paste from the other services into the Fabric experiences, the components, the services that are there. And in doing so, they're going to move so fast that they're going to lose out on some of the real benefits of Fabric, which is the collaboration side of things. So, yeah. Fabric's my hot button this month.
All right.
And for me, it's about, you know, what I see is the changing nature of the cloud. You know, in the past, we thought of Azure as, you know, a small number of enormous data centers running services. But, you know, more and more, we're starting to see all of those services containerized. What does that mean? Well, it means you can distribute them out to, you know, on-prem, out to the edge. You know, you can run things like Azure Kubernetes Service and functions and logic apps and monitor, you know, at the edge, you know, say in a manufacturing plant close to where the data is being produced, and still be connected to Azure. And what that means is, to me, it's like, it's sort of like the Azure cloud is growing in this fractal kind of way. You know, there's this, you know, the patterns are being replicated, you know, in smaller and smaller, you know, ways at different locations. You know, and even in Ignite, you saw some really interesting IoT stuff, the Azure IoT Operations module, which I wrote about recently, which is pretty cool stuff. So it's very interesting to see this evolution. And I actually think that this is a key differentiator. Microsoft's way ahead of AWS and Google in this space.
So is this the pendulum swinging back again, but with strong ties to the cloud?
I don't think so. I think it's more, okay, you know, I think it's like this, almost like a spider web expanding, of the big data centers sort of extending their reach out to the smaller and smaller ones.
Could I sum it up as, if you're not coming to Azure, we're coming to you?
Yeah, you could sum it up. You could absolutely sum it up that way.
That's a great way to say
it. All right, guys, that was excellent. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, Andy. That was really well done.
Thank you, Ninja.
All right. I would like to remind the listeners that they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics you would like to hear the directions analysts cover in any of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via Twitter or X at Mary Jo Foley. And speaking of Twitter, we at Directions have converged all our existing Twitter channels into a single new platform. Give us a follow at DirectionsMSFT for all the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information.